The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sounds of a struggle here. So, my name is Aaron Ryan.
My name's Bill Cundiff. What do we got going on today, Aaron?
Well, Bill. So I thought I would point out that we have some good stuff on the site for you today that you're probably going to want to go read. We're talking about AI today, but from kind of two different, a little bit different vantage points, and it's not what you think, maybe. First hour, we're talking about the title of his article is The Modern Day Tower of Babel and the Centralization of Evil, Ethical Implications of AI, with our friend Nathan Deshmaker. And then the second hour, which is what prompted me to kind of have the conversation with Nathan when he called me about something totally different, Joel Gilbert has done a documentary film about his former boss, Al Gore. He worked for him in the Senate. Well,
he predicted all the climate stuff, and he was right.
And Joel Gilbert's like, yeah, such a fraud. Just such a fraud. Plagiarized his book and all sorts of other stuff. But he took kind of an interesting tack, and he decided to interview AI Al Gore. So he has done a documentary of that, which is really pretty fun. There's a clip there on the site. So today is January 5th. Welcome to the brave new year. And 2025, I guess I should be clear. So if you go to January 5th, 2025 at wethepeopleradio.us, there are people trying to copy us. Can you believe it? They've like stolen our name and tried to like, you know, make other things that sound like us. But we're into year number 15, so we've been there longer than the rest of them. But you can look at Nathan's article, which is really very good, and you'll be able to find all the information on Joel and his documentary and link to some clips of that. So, without further ado, our friend Nathan Deshmaker and his family, they raise registered feeder cats in central Montana. They're kind of moving, maybe, but it's not very far, so I think this information will stay the same. He's a senior research associate and policy analyst specializing in federal and local government administrative procedures, the thing that everybody wishes they had in their community because most of us are not experts in that. So he's an expert in local government administrative procedures, land and natural resource policy making, local government relations, and program management. He's also an accomplished musician and a self-taught theologian with a love for the classics. He's worked with local governments to identify and challenge attacks on small farms and ranch operations, facing increased pressure and regulation by forces and groups outside of Montana, and many, and oftentimes outside the U.S., and if you live in a rural area, your community is facing this too, especially in the West. It's a huge, huge problem, and we all need more guys like Nathan. Hey, so Nathan, before we launch off on the topic, do tell what was the catalyst that I guess maybe that's sort of a good pun there. What was the catalyst that got you going? Was it the cattle? Like in all this?
I missed the last part you said there, the catalyst and what?
Yeah, what was the catalyst to get you, you know, kind of looking at all of this? Because you've been doing this for a while. How long?
In relationship to working with local governments and associations to engage on federal land use issues and regulations, it's a good 7-8 years, and a couple years prior to that, you know, studying into those issues, but active engagement on a variety of land use issues and different federal agencies. Been doing that work for close to a decade, like I said, about 8 years, and staying plenty busy, especially the last 4 years, for sure.
Yeah, last 4 years has been a challenge for everyone. Hey, before we go further and people bash their heads on their desks, your sound is kind of goofed up. It's like a little bit of a tin can telephone sort of a thing.
How about now?
That's pretty good, and maybe move the microphone just a teeny bit, because it's, you know, making the puffing sound.
Okay, well, I do have
Ooh,
a...
look at you. There you are.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Well, let me know if it keeps doing that or gets weird, because I do have a headset on, and if it's weird sound, I can always just jump on the phone and
oh,
remove the
no.
headset if it's weird
yeah,
sounding.
Whatever you adjusted turned you from miniature Tiny Tim Nathan to regular full-size human Nathan. That was AI
okay.
Nathan that opened the show. He's fake, though. So, yeah, we read your article, and so we'll shut up now because this is a subject we haven't tackled before, really. And your vantage point is interesting on this. So take people on your journey with AI.
Yeah, well, I guess it ties back to your first question of how I got involved in the work I do. AI came under my radar in the last couple of years because we engage agencies on land use and different regulatory processes, and as we were engaging on Forest Service monitoring and the old growth forest plans and sage grouse across 10 states, and then the solar push to open up a bunch of BLM lands for solar development, in engaging on those issues and looking into and equipping the record on those items, came across with a county that came across the fact that Department of Energy has what's called the Argonne National Laboratory in Illinois, which is a large data center, which happens to be contracted with various agencies, BLM, Forest Service, and others, and in relationship to the solar system environmental impact statement that BLM worked on and finalized recently in opening up 30 million acres of public lands in the West to solar development, that entire programmatic environmental impact statement was developed through Argonne National Laboratory. So that was kind of the beginning point with me. I was familiar with developments in AI a little bit and what was kind of taking place. And as soon as it came onto my radar that artificial intelligence or large learning data centers are being utilized to write programmatic environmental impact statements, which establish regulation and policy affecting huge swaths of lands, especially in the West, I started to think about that and study into it more because there's, you know, if we want to, the Congress requires public process, local engagement, coordination and cooperation with local cooperating agencies, county governments, in implementing regulations, policies, and rules. And if these agencies, and those programmatic EISs are supposed to be written by people, in the field offices in cooperation with local governments identifying on the ground issues. But if they're using large language model systems and data centers to draft these documents, there's a huge danger in that process that ultimately removes the public from the public process. These data centers, Argonne National Laboratory, an example, you know, they can even simulate public comment and public involvement in those processes. So that was kind of the beginning point of me starting to, and that was probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, coming across that. And then we addressed those issues in substantive comments that we put forward on the old growth plans for the Forest Service and some other items. But personally, I started, you know, researching a little more and trying to understand the implications of these AI systems as they come online. So that led to a journey of studying through those things. And as you said, the article that's accessible, I'll discuss some of the content in that article today on the program.
But it started, you know, the article is more philosophical and deals with broader issues, but for me it started with just the implications of having federal agencies using these computer model systems to, I mean, we already have enough, like the Al Gore and climate change, all the computer models that do all that, when they start using these modeling frameworks and large language computer frameworks to draft policy and regulation, it's very concerning, to say the least.
Yeah, we've seen how great that's worked out for all of us over the past few years. And we had also spoken, and I don't know if you're going to bring that up later, but the amount of land that will be required to wheel the power. I was speaking with someone this morning while I was walking the dog, and he said, "Oh, so what's on the show today?" And I was giving him a little thumbnail sketch, and I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, you know, it uses about the same amount of power as like the supercomputers." And I'm like, "Yeah, I think we're not actually prepared for the amount of power we're going to be needing." We just want to make sure we fit that in somewhere before the end.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that leads to the next step of how I got more involved in understanding the implications of AI developments. Is so it started with the programmatic solar systems they want to push and are pushing on our public lands. And then later I did some work with some counties in Kansas and some other associations. Department of Energy put forward a phase two of putting 3-mile wide corridors across Kansas and even larger corridors that ran up into the Nebraska, Dakotas, and some into Texas and a little bit into Colorado and Missouri that stretched out to Illinois. And Department of Energy in doing this, their justification for these corridors, and the corridors essentially would be a federal designation that would allow Department of Energy to bypass state and local permitting authorities to site transmission systems. Because with the build out of all this wind and solar, there is no grid in place to take on those loads and to ship that electricity to end use consumers. So Department of Energy projected significant congestions and constraints on the grid as a result of three things. There's more, but three primary things, and that is all this build out of renewable energy and also the big push to bring AI data centers online. And for your audience, you know, now you go on your smartphone and you look something up and you know, you always have at the top the AI answer, you know, and you're starting to see it in commercial advertising more so now. AI is the new thing. But a single AI generated response takes 10 times as much energy as a traditional Google search. So it takes, a massive amount of electricity, to fuel these systems. And so so when Department of Energy came out and we're pushing these corridors, and I already had a little bit of an understanding of what AI was doing and these AI systems and where they wanted to go with them, and the fact that they want to put these big swaths across states and counties to accommodate the transmission systems for tying this all together. But ultimately, AI data centers cannot be ran on the grid. So what's happening is there's big pushes for using off-grid natural gas systems to fuel nothing but these data centers. And that's happening in North Dakota, and I can touch on that in a minute. But, the energy consumption of these systems is massive. There's like $150 billion of proposed development of these systems in North Dakota alone, and the energy requirement for those systems is like six times the amount of output that the Coal Creek power station is currently putting out. So there's massive amounts of energy demand with these systems. And the question is, we currently have, you know, AI, quote-unquote, available to us for various purposes and data And there's nothing wrong with data and computing data and different things. But the question is, why are these individuals, Bill Gates and other wealthy elite individuals, wanting to massively expand these computing systems, and ultimately to what end is the question I've been asking.
Well, Bill Gates, you mentioned him. I read an article a few weeks ago that he's proposing to purchase Three Mile Island and use it solely for AI energy production. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I have. I haven't looked into that significantly, and I know there's big pushes to look for nuclear. I think with that, they're looking at maybe trying to do the nuclear basis to fuel that. So yeah, I am familiar with that. Gates is very cozy. So Doug Burgum has been the governor in North Dakota over the last couple terms, and he has opened his arms pretty widely to these types of approaches, even carbon sequestration, even jumped onto the net zero bandwagon somewhat, which is kind of concerning because Trump's appointed him, or he's not confirmed yet, but that's the potential appointee for Department of Interior. And Burgum, you know, I think is not all bad in that he realizes we need baseload electricity and et cetera. But there are some concerning things there because Burgum had a software company, Great Plains Software Company, that he sold to Bill Gates in the early thousands, 2001, somewhere in that ballpark, for like $1.1 billion. And then he went on to serve as a senior vice president in Microsoft until 2007. And then, obviously, later he became the governor of North Dakota.
Wow.
And that's one of the reasons that Bill Gates, I believe it's Gates and some others that are really pushing and the arms are open with North Dakota to be host to these types of AI computing systems. And even the North Dakota State Commerce Commissioner, Josh Tagan, told the Public Service Commission that some data center companies have individually valued products at $135 billion, demanding power loads equivalent to more than the output of six Coal Creek power stations. And they're even contemplating using, like I said earlier, off-grid natural gas plants to fuel these data centers. And the Department of Commerce told the Public Service Commission that off-grid natural gas plants, instead of natural gas being shipped to other states via pipeline, it would be consumed by data centers and data would be transported instead. And that's part of the ethical implications of this because
hold that thought, Nathan.
Go ahead.
Before we pivot there, just because we've got to take a break. And then we'll be right back. Our guest is Nathan Dishmaker. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Thanks, Bill.
Hey, you bet.
Winter getting colder, summer getting warmer, tidal wave come across the Mexican border. Why buy a gallon? It's cheaper by the barrel. Just don't get busted singing Christmas carols. That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride. Both ends of the earth don't burn it. Funny how the world keeps turning. The ball, no hands. I love this American.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Happy New Year, Redding, from your friends at Black Bear Diner, reminding you that if you're looking for more food, more fun, and more family, this is the place to be. You can count on a warm atmosphere and deliciously fresh home-style food. It's the perfect spot for every generation, with something for everyone. come for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive, Reading.
Black Bear Diner.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Reading, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson. And find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank. Member FDIC and equal housing lender.
Everybody has been dealing with the availability of homeowners insurance in Northern California. Companies not writing your home insurance anymore are leaving the state altogether. Siskiyou Insurance has hired a specialist specifically for dealing with a homeowners crisis here in Shasta County. He specializes in what the market is doing, coverages, and which companies may be able to help. Call Brian Dews at Siskiyou Insurance Services for your home or auto consultation. Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
We're the children of explorers that came here from every corner, the adventurers that settled this land. Let the world fought tyranny, touched the stars, brought liberty. Let's do that again.
There we go. All right. Back to Nathan.
We're back. So just to pick up and conclude what I was saying, that's one of my concerns is I'm all about drill, baby, drill and accessing oil and gas and carbon-based resources for end-use electricity to fuel appliances and people's homes and our equipment and vehicles. And electricity, but I don't know if I'm all in on taking massive amount, you know, off-grid systems to fuel nothing but these data centers. It seems to me like if we go down that trajectory, you and I, the ratepayers and consumers of electricity in our households, will be left with wind and solar panels, and then these big AI data centers will consume carbon-based energy sources to generate these large language computer database systems, which is very concerning as well because, like I said, the whole constraints and congestions on the grid that Department of Energy is projecting is a result of these things. The last 10 years of end use of electricity, household electricity, well, last 20 years actually, has been relatively stable at hovering around maybe just under 4,000 terawatt hours in end-use electricity, and that's been pretty stable for 20 years. So these projections of these big increases of energy demand are all policy-driven, either through the renewable energy they're citing everywhere or through the desire to bring online these large artificial intelligence data centers. And there's also some crypto mining that comes along with this as well, with Bitcoin and other things, with data centers that generate all that as well. But we're not going to go on that way. That's a whole other thing. But so that's one ethical implication, in my opinion, is I don't know if we should be – we already have increased rates for our energy costs going up because there's a war on our oil and gas sector and on our coal estate. So I think there needs to be some pressure, within this coming administration to make sure that we have access to those resources for end use electricity, not just for pushing into these, large data centers that could, like discussed earlier, consume just a massive amount of electricity and energy.
Yeah. I don't think that's something that, people really give the numbers again on the differential between like regular, is it 10 times more to look something up through AI than it is to look it up just through Google? Is that what you said?
Yeah, an AI generated result takes about 10 times as much energy as a traditional Google search on a search engine. Mm-hmm. So those computer systems, they're huge facilities, and they have to, those computer systems scour. There's also dangers too, because like with back to climate change, and this will tie into the next hour. A lot of information out there, data, is entrenched misinformation, in my opinion. And as the next hour will show, you have Al Gore and all these people that have been putting reports and documentation, the UN and the IPCC reports that have put out. So there's also dangers in entrenched misinformation where AI systems, they just groom and glean all that data that's available and generate these responses. But if you don't have a free market context of these systems, and even with it, you still have a high potential of having entrenched disinformation that's fed back to the person who's searching whatever it may be, or if you're searching climate change or man's contribution to climate change. And maybe I need to do that. I haven't done that specifically with some of these AI systems because I don't really use them that much at all personally, but I've read articles where people that are much more versed in this than I am are pointing to those concerns as well as the entrenched disinformation on various topics. And it also just feeds into a non-thinking populace. You know, Instead of having to research and do your own homework and come to your own conclusions, there's a computer that can do all that for you.
Yeah, that's the part that kind of frightens me is, you know, people go online and do a search. That's pretty much the gospel. That's all they need to know.
Well, then they regurgitate it as their own.
Yeah.
It's funny, there's a guy we get emails from, very annoying. But I noticed a long time ago that the language wasn't correct. It was like he was a foreign speaker, which is fine, but I know he's not. So I thought, I decided a long time ago he was using AI for everything. And It was funny. We were at a thing, and he's like, I use AI all the time. It's like, oh, that's how you send those, like, insanely long, ridiculous emails loaded with bloviating, just, you know what I mean? Like, they're not communication. It's just like, it's kind of like written vomit. It just comes shooting out. And because he puts in an idea and then just, boom, sends it all to you.
Yeah,
that's not a good trend. It's definitely not a good trend because that doesn't make anybody smarter. I know I'm definitely dumber after reading those emails. So just on my one small example, I'm pretty sure the IQ will start to mimic the movie that used to be comedy that's now become a documentary, Idiocracy.
Yeah, exactly.
And for those of you that have never seen Idiocracy, you really need to find it in the Wayback Machine and watch it because we're fast approaching.
Well, I watched an interview, it's been several months ago, and I don't remember who the person was, but they said in our school system, teachers are using AI to generate quizzes for the kids. The kids are using AI to answer the questions, and then when the teacher gets the test back, she uses AI to grade the questions. So what is really being learned in our school systems? I mean, it's crazy. They just push a button and there's the answer.
It's a Pavlovian universe. You press the button and the cookie comes out.
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
Are you still homeschooling, Nathan?
Yeah, we homeschool so far. Yep.
Good call.
So
your kids will be the last smart kids out there.
No, we're about sourcing information, and it's not that, you know, AI may have some accurate information or whatever, but, and like you guys allude to, there's problems just with Google and internet searches to begin with and being totally reliant on these feedbacks, which which the algorithms are a lot of times biased. I mean, historically, you know, 15 years ago, Google and YouTube, I mean, you could find all sorts of alternative information, excellent videos, but all that's been so, you can't even find a lot of that, those good videos and information that used to be readily accessible on those platforms because they've brought in all these algorithms. And we saw that through COVID. Look what they did through COVID. I mean, you have to be a good researcher just to find the doctors and the different people that are putting out excellent literature that's giving alternative perspectives and treatments and protocols, because if you go to Google and try to find it, if it's there at all, it's buried so far back that most people will never see it. All they see is the top hits, which are, you know, go get vaccinated, mask up, social distance, you know, just the conventional responses.
Yeah, the incredible rise of myocarditis is all fake. All fake.
Yeah. You know, so based on what we've just experienced in the last 4 years with the medical lockdowns in the world and different things, that's another concern for getting these AI systems to where they want to get them to is, in my opinion, if they had what they want to accomplish with these AI systems in place, it would have exacerbated those issues to a significant degree. Because even the most intelligent among us, if we're cut off from alternative information, can't totally avoid that kind of propaganda. See, it's not the, and the danger too with this is it lends to more of a socialistic communist system of governance too. Because communism requires shutting off alternative information. They want lockstep, processes and people that don't ask any questions or divert away from the status quo. But a free society actually requires that. It requires people that are independent thinkers and come to their own conclusions and use scientific inquiry and research to challenge the mainstream. And that's always been essential for preserving life, liberty, and property in free societies. And the danger with an AI type system is it gives elite people and governments potentially, because you know once these things come fully online to the degree they want them to, the government's not likely to just leave them in a free market context. There's going to be a clamp down and regulatory control, or that'll be the effort anyways. And if they accomplish that, they ultimately will accomplish a centrally planned economy, which is the age-old goal of communism and socialism. Because ultimately, if you study the Austrian economists like Friedrich Hayek and Mises and others, their biggest argument against a centrally planned economy is the impossible knowledge requirements. No one person or group of people have the knowledge to be able to compute and understand all the different spontaneous actions of individuals in the market. So AI machine learning systems pose a formidable effort by elites to implement the framework and harness the energy necessary to establish a single mind process in order to surpass those impossible knowledge requirements. And as a result, that planning movement, just like the old communist central planning efforts, starts out with goodwill and noble intentions to control things, but invariably ends up by controlling men. So here's the question. If artificial intelligence makes the crucial economic decisions, how can responsibility be assumed for the consequences of those decisions? And what device will the state measure the social costs, which it is often alleged that the individuals ignore? None of those questions have been answered. It's just, let's build the systems, let's create the frameworks. But those are the types of things I bring forward in this article is, well, what are the ethical implications to this? With this constant effort for communist pushes for centrally controlled economy, and controlled information, et cetera. So the article really delves into those sides of it. And hence the title, The Modern-Day Tower of Babel and the Centralization of Evil. And actually, the reason I chose the Tower of Babel analogy is because if you remember the Genesis account in Genesis, God, when the people came together, the Lord said, "Behold, the people are one, and they have one language, and this they begin to do, and nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do." And then shortly thereafter, God come down and confuse the languages and spread those people, the people groups, across the face of the planet, which was a way in which God decentralized evil in the world by separating the people groups by language into different geographical regions. So one of the things with artificial intelligence, the term is artificial singularity, and that's the point at which AI computing systems can translate language at the rate of a human being. So, and another term is artificial general intelligence. So the danger there is, hence the analogy to the Tower of Babel. I mean, this whole system will also serve as an attempt to do away with the language barriers of the peoples of the world, which, like I said earlier, the reason God separated the peoples across the face of the planet was to decentralize the ability for man to accumulate and centralize power and evil. So there's a concern there as well on doing away with the language barriers, which I think are important. We have different countries and sovereign nations and different people groups, which help preserve liberty in different places in the world. These AI systems pose an approach that would reconsolidate language into a single language in a way that it would very much look like a modern day Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something that we don't think about, the implication of the uniform language. We look at the level of control, and the level of control is the part that I think catches everybody. Like, hey, wait a second.
You're seeing more and more devices now that can read foreign language and translate it to your language. There are devices that when somebody speaks a foreign language, it'll translate it into your device, and you hear it in your language. And it's like you said, it's fast and probably faster than what a human can.
Which is super helpful, I mean, for communication and stuff. But the implication,
yeah, exactly,
of taking away, we're talking about sovereignty at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you no longer have countries thinking for themselves because now we're all one big happy family. And, you know, George Soros just got the Presidential Medal of Freedom, so obviously.
I was glad to see that. Yeah.
Obviously, that has no value anymore. We have to take a really quick break on that depressing note, and we'll be right back with our guest, Nathan Deshmaker. You are listening to We the People. It's January 5th, 2025. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I love my classes. I got a crazy teacher, he wears dark glasses. Things are going great, and they're only getting better. I'm doing alright, getting good grades. My future's so bright. I gotta wear shades. I gotta wear shades.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. She had minor damage to her rear bumper. I wrote her an estimate. Later, I received a call. The lady responsible for the damage wanted to pay for the repairs out of pocket. Her insurance agent told her a claim would raise her rates for years. With our experience in the claim process, I explained to her most insurance companies would forgive a claim if the cost was below a minimum amount. I suggested she contact her insurance agent and have them review her policy. She called back very excited. It appeared her policy did extend forgiveness. They would pay for the repairs, and she wouldn't be charged with a claim or have to pay a deductible. The accident would not cost her a thing. She was very pleased. Good thing the vehicle owner came to the right place for repairs. We all pay a lot for insurance. Choosing Coachmaster will ensure you get the most for your money. Let this experience work for you. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage and Collectibles in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273 in Anderson has distinct treasures to choose from, including vinyl records, DVDs, antique jewelry such as brooches and rings, necklaces and bracelets. Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage and Collectibles also offers vintage clothing and accessories such as retro dresses and scarves, jackets and hats, along with vintage furniture, tablecloths and silverware, cookware and glassware. And don't forget Mantiques, including military memorabilia, camping and mining equipment, men's jewelry such as crosses and rings, sports memorabilia, and collectibles. Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage and Collectibles in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273 in Anderson. Open Monday 10 to 6, closed Tuesday and Wednesday. Open Thursday through Saturday from 10 to 6 and Sunday noon to 5. Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage and Collectibles in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273 in Anderson.
Pretty frightening, but you know the chances are so small. Stuck by beef thing, nothing but a beef thing. Better chance you're gonna buy it at the mall. But it's a 23 or 4 to 1 that you can fall in love by the end of this song. So get up, tell the bookie put a bet. I'm not a damn thing will go wrong. The odds are that we will probably be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright tonight.
It's kind of what we were talking about on the break, Nathan. We're like, so, do you think they'll do what they do with everything else? Overreach, go berserk, and then everyone will finally figure it out and push back?
Yeah, well, that's yet to be known on where this all leads. You know, and technology is amoral. I mean, it's neither good nor evil in and of itself, but we know that there's wealthy and elite people that are evil, that want to invest in these things. So the motivations, of course, it's useful to us, you know, for various purposes and using and in a variety of areas in life. But we need to step back, though, and be aware of where these things can lead. And the interesting thing is we have the same warnings from men in the 30s and 40s and 50s just with television and just the advent of some of the technological advancements in those days. For example, A.W. Tozer was a pastor in Chicago, and in the 40s he wrote in his book, he said, "Put chains on a man's ankles and wrists and he knows it. Look deep into his eyes and you will find there the sullen revolt of the free human spirit against the bonds of slavery. But conditioning the mind creates a slave who does not know it. We are constantly being fed harmful ideas that we adopt and learn to believe in, thinking they are all right, and so we ignorantly follow. This is done without our knowing that a keen, sharp, unscrupulous mind is seeking to control us." So that's coming from a pastor in Chicago in the 40s. And then you realize NATO issued a report in 2020, a NATO-sponsored report entitled Cognitive Warfare, where they explicitly said the new tools and techniques combined with the changing technological and information foundations of modern societies are creating an unprecedented capacity to conduct virtual societal warfare. So the war and battles that we're going to face in this century are in the mind. And from a Christian perspective, that's always been the case. The battle is ultimately the mind. So, and that's why these theologians through history wrote about that and why it has so much relevancy to the technological age that we live in today. So it's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier, especially like we were speaking during the break about the idea that you're fed the same stuff over and over and over and over, and through the AI implications that we've been discussing, let's say you cull out all of that that other information that causes you to question. How, I mean, I don't know that anybody's had that much control at any given time, but how long does that take before pretty soon, you know, There is
There's one answer for everything.
Well, I guess Atlas Shrugged was sort of, you know, without the AI, you know, you saw what happened there. You had some holdouts, and I think we always will. But will they be such a small minority that they can't, you know, that they don't have enough influence? I think will be the that'll be the true test.
Are there any?
Nathan,
when you go online, you're doing a search or you're doing research on something. Are there any red flags that stand out that you need to be aware of to know that you're?
Red flag is AI wants to give you an answer, and I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah, but a lot of times they don't come right out and say that. How do you know if this is just an AI-generated response? Is there anything you need to look for?
You know, that's a tough question. I guess the way I would answer that is the best antidote to any misinformation, whether it's artificial intelligence or just some person propagating propaganda and misinformation, is you personally need to be rooted in fundamental principles and have discernment. So from a spiritual perspective, this is critical for that, and that's how we decipher information. And even in government, you know, when we deal with federal agencies, it's the same thing there. Is the question isn't whether or not this is right or wrong. The question is, do they even have the authority to do it?
Yep.
What are the principles of enumerated powers that gives this agency to act that way to begin with?
Right.
Whether you agree with what they're doing or not is irrelevant. Are they functioning according to first principles? And that's how I cut through all the bureaucracy when I engage on policy issues and regulations, is you can't just read hundreds of thousands of pages of bureaucratic documents. But you identify what they're pushing, what they're saying, and the authorities they're claiming, and you contrast that with the first principles of good government. And it, like I said, irregardless of whether you agree with what they're doing or not, if it breaks with first principles, they shouldn't be doing it. And I think it's the same principle with, like you're saying, with information and just personally looking at information. And the good news is they can't totally control information as long as we have a Bible and books on our shelf where we can reference and have those alternative sources. But the danger is we're losing bookshelves too and everything else to these AI systems and computer systems. Everything's digitized now. But I don't know if that answers your question specifically, but that's what I would say is individually you need to be rooted in first principles. You need to know who you are as an individual. If you're a believer, you should know your God. Jesus said, "My sheep will not go after the voice of a stranger."
Hmm.
So we need to be in tune to the truth. And when we're tuned to the truth, we're able to discern falsehood and that which is not. And it's deceptive. I mean, it wouldn't be deception if it,
Well, you know, the other part of it too, the other facet of this, and we saw that in 2020, that was all driven, just I'd say 90% of all of that insanity was driven by fear. And so for me, as soon as they come at me with fear, I'm like, okay, you're probably lying. I mean, unless, you know, I can hear really loud noises in the background and they tell me that there's, you know, something happening. It's like, okay, I kind of believe your crackling noises and it gets really hot, probably a fire. But I guess I'd run out of the house then. But fear is a powerful, powerful tool. And it was really interesting, the homily at church a week or two ago. And I don't know why I didn't know this. I mean, I'm old. Going to church a long time, and he pointed out that there were 365, not 66 or 64, but 365 specific references in the Bible that say, "Be not afraid."
Yep.
And he's like, obviously, those are there because fear not is the message 365 days a year.
Once a day.
And it was like,
yeah.
Huh. Well, apparently he said that is the most referenced message throughout the entire thing. And I thought, well, I guess that's fairly clear. If you get nothing else out of it, pull that. But the fear. Fear is always the tool.
Absolutely. Fear, and the command is to fear not. And the other side of that, not only was it fear, but it was love your neighbor. They took what all of us would, in the general context of things, agree with. Love your neighbor as yourself. So if you don't wear a mask, you don't love your neighbor. If you don't get vaccinated, you don't love your neighbor. And so therein lies a deception. And even what's ironic is you had unbelievers using the Bible to coerce Christians into things that they, through fear and other mechanisms. So first there's the fear, and then it's like, oh, you're supposed to love your neighbor. You should do that. And I had people that told me that aren't even believers. It's very ironic that unbelieving people resort to certain things like that to push that. And then it guilt trips you, and if you're not well established, into going down a pathway that may not be the best and may not be the most loving either. Because love confronts things. Love, and with the fear side, the verse I think of is, Jesus said, do not fear man who can kill your body, but fear the Lord who has the power over life and death in your soul. So if we're aligned there, we shouldn't fear what people can do to us and what the world can do. We need to have our hearts, minds, and affections set on the things above. Because ultimately, what I see in all this AI stuff and everything, everything is pushing towards globalism.
Yes.
And thankfully we have an administration coming in and a pretty good election that took place that I think is a reprieve to that, and maybe we can turn the tide somewhat. But the fact is there's still the momentum is still towards globalism. So we need to be aware of that, and that's a good way, I guess, to summarize the talk on that is don't be afraid and understand the truth, be established in first principles, and read a book every now and again. Open, get a good book and read it.
Yeah, and don't give them up. Don't count on only the other ones. It's funny because Christina gave me this little, I don't know if it's a meme or what, but it said, I want AI to do my laundry and dishes so I can do art and writing. Not for AI to do my art and writing so I can do my laundry and dishes. And so I guess,
exactly.
Yeah, let's use these things as tools to improve our life, not run it. I don't want the computer to run my life. It's a great enhancement, but let's keep it there. I know we're going to talk about this at a different time, but we need to also speak about the massive implications of land use in order to wield the amount of power that'll be required for this type of technology. Because that's, I think, something that people will ultimately see, but they should be sort of geared up for, because it'll hit them like a ton of bricks.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of farm ground, a lot of counties, a lot of states that are in the way of massive transmission buildouts. And BLM just finalized, approved opening up 30 million acres of public lands to wind, to solar development, utility scale solar systems. So,
oh, terrific.
Hopefully that's going to be squashed and dealt with the Trump administration, but that's yet to be seen. And so, yeah, that could be a follow up conversation for sure on just the land use side of this, on the footprint of the policy trajectories that there's a lot of people and farms in the way.
And to give people some tools, because when those meetings come, there are tools to kind of peel that apart, and that you should go. We have to let you go because we're going to have the news and blah, 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 and you have a day to have. So, Nathan Deshmaker, you are a wealth of information, and we thank you for coming on with us.
Yeah, it was a great show. Thanks for the information, Nathan.
We will be right back with AI Al Gore.
I'm having a ball. Don't stop me now.
If you want.
8243CT Reading.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. If you're trying to drive right now in the Midwest, good luck.
Storm's going to be pretty impactful with respect to travel. Today, Sunday, across the plains and spreading into the Ohio Valley, and then on Monday into the Mid-Atlantic region. So there's a combination of heavy snow, low visibility, and then as you go a little bit farther south into southern Missouri, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, and parts of Kentucky, the threat is going to be for ice. So all told, there's a lot of travel disruptions on schedule or on tap over the next few days.
Bob Orovac, lead forecaster with the National Weather Service. Also at townhall.com, President Biden has blocked the $15 billion proposed deal for Nippon Steel of Japan to purchase Pittsburgh-based U.S. steel.
This isn't about Japan. This is about U.S. steelmaking and keeping one of the largest steel producers in the United States, an American-owned company.
White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby, but critics are blasting Biden for what they say is a huge mistake. The Japanese company had promised to invest nearly $3 billion in U.S. Steel's aging blast furnace operations in Gary, Indiana, and Pennsylvania's Mon Valley. If the Nippon offer goes away, those commitments also will be gone. Apple has agreed to fork over $95 million. That to settle a suit that accused the company of turning its virtual assistant Siri into a, quote, snoop that eavesdropped on users of iPhones and other trendy devices in a so-called betrayal to its longstanding commitment to personal privacy. That proposed settlement still needs to be approved, though, by a judge. More on these stories, townhall.com.
The new administration has
heard me talk about Relief Factor and how so many people enjoy a better, more pain-free life because of it. If you're dealing with everyday pain, it makes sense you'd want to try it first. Well, Relief Factor makes that pretty pain-free, too, with their three-week quick start kit for only $19.95. An easy, affordable way to see how it could literally change your life, like it has mine. Relief Factor is a daily supplement that fights pain naturally. Developed by doctors, Relief Factor doesn't just mask pain temporarily. It helps reduce or eliminate pain. In fact, the longer you take it, the more effective it is. Trying it couldn't be easier with their three-week quick start for only $19.95, less than a dollar a day. And it just takes a phone call to 1-800-4-RELIEF. That's 1-800-4-RELIEF. 1-800-4-RELIEF. Wherever you're having pain, every day you feel better is a day you live better. Try Relief Factor's three-week quick start. Visit ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. 800-4-RELIEF. For Relief Factor.
It is entirely possible we could soon have cancer warnings added to bottles and drinks of alcoholic beverages.
Vivek Murthy announced the proposal, citing mounting research about links between alcohol and cancer. He says there are an estimated 100,000 cases and 20,000 deaths in the U.S. every year deemed alcohol-related, according to a Friday social media post on X. The suggested warnings would come in addition to warning labels already attached to alcohol products about the risk of birth defects for pregnant women. George Williams reporting.
Republicans are stepping up scrutiny of dozens of shelters being run by aid groups on the border with Mexico. New study finds the so-called shelters are a magnet for illegal immigration. Many of them are nonprofits that rely on federal funding. Trump administration vowing to review the role of the governmental organizations. Breaking news and analysis, townhall.com. California will start requiring property insurers to increase coverage in wildfire-prone areas.
This comes after homeowners across the state increasingly struggle to find policies. The state's new rule requires insurers to start increasing their coverage by 5% every 2 years until they hit the equivalent of 85% of their market share. That means if an insurer writes 20 out of every 100 state policies, they'd need to write 17 in a high-risk area. The requirement will take effect within 30 days. Some worry it will increase premiums in California by 40%. John Scott reporting.
Israel has aided a former soldier to leave Brazil after legal action was initiated against him by a group accusing Israelis of war crimes in the Gaza Strip. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Hour 2. Of We the People Radio on Sunday, January 5th, 2025. Can you believe it?
I know it.
I know. I haven't written the date enough to blow it
yet. I blinked and 2024 was over.
Actually, in a lot of ways, that's I envy you.
Yeah.
The rest of us, it felt like a long, slow rope burn. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Pendiff.
And we just finished an hour with Nathan Deshmaker on AI and a lot of the ethical implications there. So now we're moving to a different phase of AI discussion with a new friend named Joel Gilbert. He is the director of The Climate According to AI, Al Gore. I got this on an email, and I got that far and was like, oh, I want to talk to this guy.
Then I
kept reading, right? So he's a documentary filmmaker based in Los Angeles, and he's the president of Highway 61 Entertainment. He's a graduate of the London School of Economics and George Washington University as an MBA. And he is a political commentator and a foreign policy analyst. He's produced documentary feature films on American politics, including Michelle Obama 2024, Dreams from My Real Father, There's No Place Like Utopia, and Trump, The Art of the Insult, which is my favorite part, actually. His investigative projects include the blockbuster film The Trayvon Hoax, Unmasking the Witness Fraud That Divided America. And he's also produced films on Middle East history and politics, including Farewell Israel and Atomic Jihad. Other films feature music icons Inside Bob Dylan's Jesus Years and Bob Dylan World Tour 1966, the home movies, as well as mockumentaries. I like that. That's a genre I can get into, mockumentaries. Paul McCartney Really Is Dead and Elvis Found Alive. I know, it doesn't matter. I read it a few times so I wouldn't laugh, and I was like, I couldn't help it. So I've got his website linked up. I have his X account linked up. I've got all sorts of good stuff linked up. His name is Joel Gilbert, and so we're excited to hear about the real Al Gore. And I didn't blow the I guess I kind of buried the lead. He needs to tell us how he even knows Al Gore, because that's a fun story too. Joel, good afternoon.
Yeah, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. So we'll kind of goof around a little bit, I'm sure, but for the most part, I'm dying to know how you got in two things. Why you're doing the one on Al Gore, but how you got involved in all this AI documentary thing, because it's a really fun idea.
Yeah, well, the way I got involved to do this film called The Climate According to AI, Al Gore, is interesting. I actually worked for Al Gore as a student intern when he was a U.S. senator from Tennessee, and I was a student in Washington, so I got to know him a little bit in his Senate office. And so I even ran into him about 5 years ago at the Nashville airport. I was flying to L.A., and so was he on Southwest Airlines, standing right next to me in line, and he remembered me from his office, and I sat next to him and talked to him on the way to L.A. So I knew him, and I started looking into the whole climate panic narrative that's been going on for years. Biden administration recently funded something called the Inflation Reduction Act, which is really just a $300 billion climate bill. And I've been looking at all this pressure building up on Western countries to change the way they live, change the way they grow crops. Here in California, of course, they're banning the sale of gas-powered cars.
Right.
You know, so there's just so much going on in the climate. So I had this idea to kind of look at where it all started. And it really was Al Gore who started the whole climate narrative. He's kind of the godfather. And it started with his book that he came out with in 1992 called Earth in the Balance, best-selling book. And he said there was a climate emergency, an environmental emergency. There's too much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The more humans put into it, the more we're going to melt the ice caps, and we have to change the way we live, or we're going to flood the earth, and we've got 10 years to live, this kind of thing. It's kind of about a whole apocalypse. And I realized that no one really looked into where Gore got this information from. Now, Gore admitted, he said he was no scientist. He said, yeah, I studied government. I'm no scientist, but he said in his book and even in his follow-up film in 2006, An Inconvenient Truth, he spends a lot of time saying, hey, I got this information from my Harvard professor named Roger Revelle. So you can just count on this, because this professor told me this in 1969 when I took his class for 3 months. And I realized that no one ever looked into this, just kind of accepted that on face value. So I went down to the archives at the University of San Diego where Roger Revelle's papers are stored, and I find the course that he taught Al Gore was actually called Human Populations. It had nothing to do with the climate. It was all about the world population explosion, which was the big thing at the time. People were concerned about that. Nothing about atmospheric science at all. Gore gets a C in the class. Then I read all of Roger Revelle's interviews and papers he's written for 30, 40 years, and he completely disagrees with everything Gore was saying about the climate and greenhouse gases and carbon dioxide. Completely doesn't agree with him.
Wow.
And Gore actually got caught in this. People didn't notice it, but when he ran for vice president in the debate against Dan Quayle, they actually confronted him and they said, hey, Gore, this book you just came out with, Earth in the Balance, I read that your mentor doesn't even agree with you, what you're saying. And Gore lies in response. He says, no, he was misquoted. He lies to get out of it, but it was not misquoted. It was 40 years of his papers and writings and articles completely disagrees with Gore. Okay, so I realize now that I'm the first person to actually research his Harvard professor, I think I'm going to blow the lid off the whole climate narrative because Gore made it up. And it's not that he actually made it up. What I did is I looked at Gore's other university experience was at the Vanderbilt Divinity School. Vanderbilt Divinity School was kind of a draft dodger's haven. People went there to get out of the Vietnam War. That's what Gore did. He didn't go there to become a minister. He went there just to get out of the Vietnam War being a soldier. And there I find that Gore had these radical environmental professors. And I find on the reading list that he had, there was a book called Our Plundered Planet from the 1940s. It was a book that was saying, don't worry about nuclear war. Humanity is destroying the earth because we're cutting down too many trees and we're using fossil fuels and humans are going to destroy the world just by using too many resources. That was the premise of the book. So I read the book and it turns out that Gore actually plagiarizes this book to a great extent. And just simply rewrote it to create his book, Earth in the Balance. So I realized that when Gore in 1992 came out with his manifesto, with his apocalypse, he couldn't say, I got this off a book from the 40s and my radical professors at divinity school. So he has to lie and say, oh, I got this from Harvard, so people would take him seriously. So that's when I decided I'm going to make a film about this, and I email Al Gore. Now, he knows me, so he should respond. I email him, and I say, investigated your Harvard professor, Roger Revelle, and I'd like to talk to you about it and your whole climate science background. And he doesn't respond. Now,
big
I
shock.
Figure, you know, probably that's the last thing he would want is somebody who's actually done the research, he'd want to talk to them and be confronted with this information. So he doesn't respond, and I say, well, that's kind of disappointing. But then I realized I know so much about Gore. I'd read about 6 biographies. I've looked at hundreds of interviews, and I know him in person. I said, you know, I know so much about him, I could kind of create a narrative and a story and actually interview Al Gore in my movie and have an honest conversation because it will reflect all of my research. So I realized that if you look online, you can just kind of Google it. There's a number of companies that if you upload a 5-minute voice sample of somebody, you can then get them, you can just type anything you want based on the voice sample, and it'll kick back the audio of that person talking in their exact speaking voice. And there's similar companies for video. You can upload a 5-minute video of anybody, and then you provide that company with the audio that you created on the other website, and they can kick back to you a video with the audio of that person talking, and it looks like the person, and it sounds like the person. So I thought, well, that'd be a fun and interesting way to do this film, because there have been other films about the climate hoax that have come out over time, and the problem is they're kind of like a lecture, and they're kind of boring. It's all talking heads. So I thought this would be kind of entertaining, and so that's what I did. I created an entire feature film called The Climate According to AI Al Gore, which goes through his whole life history as well as the whole climate science, and I confront him about his Harvard professor. I confront him about divinity school, all the things he doesn't want to talk about. And it's a very entertaining film and very informative. I actually just screened it in Australia. The Libertarian Party brought me over there, and we screened it in the National Parliament and CPAC and other places. And it was just released here in December. So anyone can look at the movie, look at the trailer, and link up to where you can live stream it or get a DVD if you go to climatealgore.com. It's climatealgore.com.
And we have a link to the trailer for your movie on our site, so if folks want to go in and look at that, and get kind of an idea of what you're talking about. I found it quite entertaining. How was it received in Australia?
Everybody loved it. You know, the climate panic is about 10 times stronger in Europe and Australia than it is in the United States. So they've got all these policies that limit farming, that limit everything they do in government. It has to go through these climate committees. So it's been very intense over there for many years. But there are people that realize that it's just hurting their economies. It's holding back their growth. It's limiting their freedoms. So, for instance, I showed the film at one location in Brisbane, and a girl came up to me. She was 18. She said, "I've been inundated with this climate narrative in school my whole life. And now I realize from your movie it was just based on one person, and he made it up. So I feel like I just got deprogrammed." That's what she said.
Nice. I would think that once people start to watch it unravel, you kind of can't stop seeing it. All of a sudden you realize, hey, wait a minute, that's part of that. Wait, that's part of that. In the first hour we were talking about it, when the entire effort is driven by fear, that's your first clue that there's some, you know, that you ought to look into it a little further. And his whole thing is about fear.
Well, part of the whole climate narrative is this idea of panic, that we got to, like, panic because there's this apocalypse, gloom and doom. They've been predicting this every 5 years or 10 years. They say, we only got 10 years, we have to do all this stuff. But if you look into it, and I go into that in my film, the whole climate panic narrative is just the same old scam that they've been pushing for many years, people and political movements that want central planning and wealth redistribution. It's all about these socialist solutions that nobody would vote for. It's all about redistributing wealth to poor countries. So it's all about an assault on the free market system.
Mm. Even the dog doesn't like it. Smart dog. So as you got going in this, did was there pushback? Did you hear? Al Gore didn't call you back, but you know, did any of his guys, or did you start getting, you know?
Well, I haven't heard from them yet. The way my films have typically worked, you mentioned a number of them, and I have revealed a number of well-researched documentaries where I show, for instance, I think I made the case very strongly that Barack Obama's real biological father was not the Kenyan student Barack Obama, but it was the man that raised him in Hawaii named Frank Marshall Davis that Obama spends a lot of time talking about and grew up with him and was radicalized by him. That's his real biological father. It's Frank Marshall Davis, who was a Soviet agent, and that looks just like Obama. We don't have the DNA, but this is the man that raised him and looks like him as a carbon copy, whereas Obama looks nothing like any of the Kenyans. The Trayvon Martin case, you might remember George Zimmerman was put on trial because of Rachel Gentel, was this girl that was about 150 pounds heavier and 2 years older than Trayvon, and she showed up in court and said, oh, I was his girlfriend and I was on the phone with him right before he got shot. I proved beyond any doubt with all the evidence that That was a fake witness, that his real girlfriend was actually a year younger and very good looking. Her name was Diamond Eugene, and she was on the phone with Trayvon, but she refused to lie to the police, and that's why they got that substitute witness to get Zimmerman arrested. So I've shown a number of these things, and typically what happens when I do these revelations, the media should have done their job and looked into the Trayvon Martin case. Anybody could have walked into the Florida record office, which was public, and gotten a hold of Trayvon Martin's text messages, which I did. And in the text messages, he's texting back and forth with Diamond Eugene. That's his girlfriend. She's the one on the phone with him. And he says, text me a picture of you. And she sends the picture. She says, did you get the picture? He says, yes. And there's the picture right there in the text messages. And it's not Rachel Gentile. It's this other girl. So anyone could have done that, but the media doesn't do their job. No one's looked into Al Gore's claims for 30 years that he got this climate panic narrative from his Harvard professor. No one looked into it. So typically what the media does is they don't like it when someone else does their job for them. So they tend to ignore it when my films first come out. They try to ignore it as best they can. And then what happens is over time they start to get confronted with it, and then it kind of blows up. So we're still in the initial phase.
Have you found anything in his book, Inconvenient Truth, that has actually come true?
Okay, wait, before we do that, we have to take a really quick break. But I knew that Bill hates that book. He wants to do, like, a series of shows where all we do is just unravel the whole thing. So we're fans. Anyway, we'll be right back. Our guest is Joel Gilbert. You are listening to We the People. You can find the commercial-free archive and all the information about Joel's film and contact information for interviews and all that at wethepeopleradio.us.
Turtle Bay's 5th annual Redding Garden of Lights is back for another fun-filled holiday season, open on select dates from November 22nd through January 5th. Featuring over 10 acres of outdoor illuminated gardens filled with 2 million lights, don't miss this year's new additions, including new light displays and premium ticket packages. Plus, holiday-themed food, drinks, music, glowing swings, model trains, and much more. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets now at turtlebay.org.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Redding, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson, and find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender.
At Greg's Pump and Well Service, we believe integrity is the cornerstone of everything we do. This month, we proudly salute our armed forces and first responders, those who embody true service, dedication, and integrity. When you choose us for your pump and well needs, you're choosing a company that shares those same values. Thank you for your service. Let us serve you with pride. 530-282-5395. Call us at 530-282-5395, license 109-0355.
Considering the purchase of an e-bike, why not get more bang for your buck? Redding Electric Utilities e-bike program offers $1,000 towards an e-bike and $150 towards a lock and helmet for income-eligible applicants. With gas and car prices on the rise, there's no better time to take advantage of the new cycling connections in Redding. Join the movement to save some green while going green. E-biking means more fun, more trails for your tires, and more smiles per mile. Find out if you qualify at cityofredding.org/rebates.
Little white lies been around for years. Little white lies ringing in your ears. You turn around, come around back on you. Well, now little white lies catching up to you.
I didn't give you a little soundtrack. Good old Sammy Hagar. He knew about Al Gore. Honestly, go back. Sorry, Bill.
Oh, I was just curious if his book, anything in his Inconvenient Truth book, any of that has come true.
Okay. Look, every prediction that Al Gore made since the 1992 Earth in the Balance book through his, an Inconvenient Truth movie in 2006, all his predictions have proven to be bunk. He said the ice caps are melting, there's a hole in the ozone layer, all not true. What happened between 92 and about 2007, actually, is the Earth kept getting colder rather than warmer. Every winters would get longer. They'd have these climate conferences in Europe, and they couldn't start on time because the airports were snowed in. So no one was really buying into it. By about 2006 or 7, they realized they had a big problem because there was no global warming. So they decided to change the terminology. They changed the term to climate change so that any seasonal weather, they could say, oh, well, that's climate change. They dropped the whole global warming thing because it was not working at all.
Mm-hmm.
So even to this day, 2024, last year, Al Gore was still showing up at these climate conferences, and he'd start screaming and say, it's 110 degrees in Las Vegas in July. There's a hurricane in September in the Gulf of Mexico. Give us all your money. So they're creating this panic around just climate change. And he's had people echo this about every 5 or 6 years. They say, oh, we got 5 years to live. The whole climate is going to collapse. So none of these predictions have come true. And it's based on the fact that Gore made up this science, which he got out of this book from the 1940s, claiming that there's too much carbon dioxide, and humanity is causing the weather to change and get warmer because of fossil fuels. The very basic science of it is not true. In reality, and you learn this in my film, The Climate According to A.I. Al Gore, carbon dioxide is only 1/3 of 1% of all the gas in the atmosphere. It has no effect on the weather whatsoever. The weather and the temperature are actually controlled by the tilt of the Earth, sunspots, volcanoes, ocean flows. There's about 100 factors which can control and contribute to temperature movements, not carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide, in fact, you learn in my film, is plant food. We need more of it. There's historically not enough. The more carbon dioxide gets put in the atmosphere, the more gets absorbed by the plants in the oceans. And the taller the trees get, the more green deserts we get, the more crops we get. So we actually need more carbon dioxide, not less. And that's why all of Al Gore's predictions have fallen flat, because the very basic idea of carbon dioxide being a bad gas or some kind of poison that's heating up the Earth is total bunk.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was actually a pretty smart move on their part to change it to climate change. Because actually, I'm thinking the people on the East Coast right now would really like to see a little bit of global warming, considering what they're going through right now. So, yeah, and then you have, people like AOC saying we have 12 years left to live.
That was quite a while ago. I think we're almost done.
Yeah, I think we're almost
probably
there.
Probably no need to go to the grocery store today.
Yeah.
Probably have enough.
Probably. Yeah.
I'm so curious in your research. Nobody's going to be able to say this definitively, but you've looked at this a lot more than most. How is it that he still has any credibility?
Well, look, Al Gore is the godfather of this movement. He, invented it out of thin air, and it was taken over by certain political forces that want to impose these socialist solutions on the world that nobody wants. So, Al Gore, they can't really discredit him because he's the one that kind of came up with it. I think because of many psychological issues that I talk about in my film, about Al Gore's need to have a place of prominence, because people don't remember, but his father was a U.S. senator from Tennessee. So Gore actually was born in Washington, D.C. He grew up in Washington, and his parents raised him to be president one day. That was their goal. They raised him to be president. The problem was that when Gore ran for Congress at the age of 26 in 1975, he quickly realized he did not have a personality for politics. His father had great charisma, was a people person. Al Gore had none of that. He was an awkward speaker. He was a difficult person to talk to. He was kind of this distant person, and he had no charisma whatsoever. So he realized that he needed issues to fulfill his parents' ambitions for him to become president. That's why when he got to Congress, he decided he would make himself into a defense hawk and an arms control expert. And that's what he did in the 80s. He even came up with an arms control agreement to settle the Cold War and went to Russia to talk with the Russians about it. Ronald Reagan ignores Al Gore completely and wins the Cold War without him. That's when Gore turned to environmentalism in the late 80s. He realized that environmentalism was a popular issue among Democrats. There was no downside. There was a lot of concern about the environment from the Chernobyl disaster, from Exxon Valdez spill. So he thought that could be an issue which would propel him to the White House. Now, he ultimately failed, losing to George Bush in 2000, and that's when I think he enjoyed the whole climate godfather position, this big international president of the world position that he was able to take over with the idea that listen to me, I'm like God. I can tell you the sky is falling, and if you don't do what I say, you're all going to die. So he kind of enjoys that position. It's a psychological need for him to have that position. He's never going to admit he was wrong. And the people that are making trillions off of this climate panic narrative aren't going to say he's wrong either because there's so much money involved.
When you knew him way back when, how old were you? I'm assuming you were 20.
I was in my 20s. Yeah, I was a student.
So did you think, I mean, the guy was a senator and you were an intern. Like, did you think the guy had it all going on and then later go, wait a minute, I think he's full of it? Or at the time, were you kind of wondering?
Yeah, people asked me, like, what was it like to work with Al Gore?
Yeah.
Even at that time. And I would say to them, he's a very strange person. Very shallow is what I would say. When you talk to him, that's all there is. There's nothing else behind it. It's just he's a very superficial, shallow person. I actually got in an argument with him once that I only understood it when I made this film. I never understood his behavior until I made this film that I understood it. What happened was he invited all the interns into his office one day just to have some, you know, social conversation. You know, what are you studying and what do you do? And at some point, he said, I'm going to open the floor for questions, which was kind of weird. And one girl asked him a question. She said, what should we do about U.S. policy in the Middle East to prevent terrorism? What should U.S. policy be to stop terrorism? There's been some terrorism in Israel. And Gore goes into about a five-minute speech about negotiating. He says, you got to negotiate everything, bring people to the negotiating table, make a negotiation and an agreement. And when he was done, I said, no, Senator Gore, I think what she's asking is what should be the U.S. policy to deter terrorism? What should be our policy in the first place that would prevent terrorism? And he looks over at me and he yells. He says, what would you do, just bomb everybody? I couldn't believe it. I was just shocked. I was shocked. So I said, so he kind of like was in my face. You know, he's like challenging me. So I said, well, I don't know what I would do, Senator Gore, but when I'm a U.S. senator one day, I'll have a policy. And so everybody was kind of shocked because you're not really supposed to talk back to them. And I thought they would fire me or something, but nothing ever happened. But I realized I was always confused by that behavior. But when I saw what Gore did to the scientists that disputed his theory that he presented in Earth in the Balance, Gore would invite these scientists to the Senate committees. Like one was Sherwood Idso. That's one who's in my film. Sherwood Idso actually worked for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And he did an experiment with carbon dioxide. What he did is he grew sour orange trees in an environment in a greenhouse with double the carbon dioxide that's in our Earth's atmosphere. And he grew another group of sour orange trees in regular carbon dioxide. And the group of trees in the double the carbon dioxide after 5 years had grown three times as tall, three times the biomass, and three times the amount of fruit they was producing. So his conclusion was, we need more carbon dioxide. You can't put enough into the atmosphere. The more you put in, it all gets absorbed by the plants. It's plant food. So Al Gore invites Sherwood Idsoe, who works for the Department of Agriculture, down to the U.S. Senate, and he viciously attacks him, and he says, you must be working for OPEC, aren't you? And he says, no. And he says, you're just like the cigarette manufacturers in the 1950s. You're denying the truth. And he says, no, I'm not. I did an experiment. So that's what Gore did. He viciously attacks people that question what he says. It was the way he treated me as an intern, which was shocking. And they've created a whole, you know, narrative about this over time. They call them climate deniers. It's a whole religion. Yeah. Like, if you don't agree with them, you're a denier. So that's what it is today. There's this view of the climate activists that the Earth is perfect and pristine, and humanity is ruining the Earth by using fossil fuels, by cutting down trees. We're all these original sinners in their religion. But they say, well, you can get salvation, though, through sustainability. So if you buy an electric car, you're good in their religion. If you don't, you're bad. You're a denier. So anyway, that's some of my history with Al Gore, and gained more of an understanding of where he's coming from. He really can't take it if you don't agree with him.
Yeah, he kind of strikes you as that kind of guy, petulant, you know, just kind of petulant and entitled. Is he an only child?
No, he has a sister who died actually of lung cancer way back in the 1980s.
Yeah, he just seems to have kind of like that only child personality. No offense to only children out there, but we all know who you are. All of us from big families, we can tell.
Well, you know, there's got to be some truth to this whole thing, because Bill Nye, the science guy, just got the Medal of Freedom. I mean,
God, George Soros and Bill Nye, the science guy. I mean, we're living in an alternate universe. So Joel, on this whole thing, are you going to follow? Are you going to follow this up with more things in this genre, if you will, on the climate thing?
Well, this film just came out, so I don't know if I'll do another project or when I would. I'm hoping to actually testify before Congress about my findings about Roger Revelle and the research I've done about where this whole climate narrative actually originated. So I hope to be doing a lot of work on this subject. It may not be another film, though, anytime soon.
Oh, okay. But still, you're going to keep following, because, honestly, all these things, like when you were listing off some of the things that were fake that we have heard for years, and even the Trayvon Martin thing, off the climate deal, but the Trayvon Martin thing, I've never heard that girl's name, like ever.
Well, which one, Rachel Gentile or the Diamond Eugene?
Yeah, the real girlfriend.
Rachel Gentile.
Well,
yeah.
If you follow the trial, look, there was a centerpiece of the trial where there was a letter that was sent to Trayvon Martin's mother from his girlfriend, and it was actually signed, Diamond Eugene signed the letter. And when they brought Rachel Gentile into the court, they said, wait a minute, did you write this letter to Trayvon's mother? She said, yes. Now, first she said, well, I didn't write it because I don't know how to write.
Oh.
That's what she said. She says, I don't know how to write. Who wrote the letter? Well, my friend Francine wrote it. Did you sign it? Yes, I signed it. Why did you sign the name Diamond Eugene if your name is Rachel Gentile? And she said, oh, that's my nickname, which is preposterous.
Oh,
no one
gosh.
Has a first and last name of somebody else for a nickname.
Yeah, right.
But the lawyers, somehow they didn't pursue it. They just accepted it.
Wow.
So the name Diamond Eugene did come up quite a bit in the trial, but Rachel Gentile simply said, oh, that's my nickname. And nobody really realized what the hell was going on.
Unbelievable.
Well, I think we're actually entering into a time period now where people, I hope, are questioning a lot of things. I mean, if you look at the current election, people, I think, are getting a little fed up with the misinformation, and frankly, I think the whole climate thing could be next on the chopping block. What do you think?
Well, let's hope so. I mean, Trump has to do a lot of work. It's going to take a year or two just to undo the damage and all these things that have been put into place by Biden's handlers.
Mm-hmm.
Look, Jimmy Carter just died, and people ask me about Jimmy Carter. We're still trying to recover from the Jimmy Carter presidency. Look what Iran has done. It was Jimmy Carter who withdrew support, U.S. support for the Shah of Iran, our U.S. ally, and allowed the Islamists to take power in Iran. And the world is still suffering from this. So who knows, you know, how long it'll take to unravel all these programs, including the whole climate narrative that Biden's handlers have put into place. They funded them with billions and billions of dollars. So
yeah,
it's going to be an effort to
I think that's going to be key to really shutting a lot of this down is go after the funding. I mean, I just don't see, when you look at California, I just don't see how they're going to make it with their current policies. I mean, no gas-powered vehicles by 2035. I mean, that's not even realistic. I mean,
gave us the vehicles, we don't have the electricity.
Yeah, we don't even have the infrastructure to power the ones we have on the road now. I mean, they come out with warnings, you know, only certain times of the day you can. In the summertime, they want you to charge your electric car because the grid's too weak. Well, what's going to happen in 2035 when they dump millions of these cars on the market? I think we need to start taking a real serious look at some of these policies and start shutting the funding down and get back to common sense, because it seems like we're not operating from that perspective.
Well, there's just been a narrative. And if you agree with a narrative, you do all these things, all this funding, all these policies fit the narrative. If you don't agree with the narrative, you're some kind of heretic, you know.
Right.
So it's tough to overcome. I think my film has a chance to upend a lot of it.
Well, there was a report years ago where a lot of these proclaimed science activists or scientists couldn't get funding for their projects unless they agreed with the narrative. And I think that still goes on, doesn't it?
Look, universities, green organizations, you know, UN are all funded. There's literally trillions to keep the climate change narrative going. Everyone is being paid to agree.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask any real scientist, they'll tell you there's nothing to global warming at all. The climate is very complex, and we cannot make reliable prognoses. That carbon dioxide has no effect on the weather whatsoever. So, but there's just so much money involved. They have these climate conferences where they get these international agreements by letting China, India, and African countries off the hook. What they do is they say, well, the Western countries have all this carbon dioxide, so we're going to send you guys billions of dollars to compensate and help out with your climate policies. And the poor countries are like, great, yeah, send us the money. They have no intention of spending it on anything
exactly
that they're supposed to. So it's all about redistributing wealth. So there's a lot to do to overcome this. It's been building up for years. And Al Gore, I believe, is the most influential person in recent history because he's created this narrative that's affected so many countries worldwide for the negative. We have slow growth and no growth in these economies in Europe and Australia because of the climate policies, because they're cutting back on energy, cutting back on farming to achieve these carbon dioxide goals, which are counterproductive. As I said earlier, we need more carbon dioxide. The more we can put in the atmosphere, the better off we'll be.
Yeah, it makes no sense, and it's like we've convinced everybody to mutually self-destruct, and with no, the strange part is, it's all stick, no carrot, and somehow nobody really notices that the carrot is missing. We have to take a really quick break. Our guest is Joel Gilbert, and his film, we can't plug it enough. The Climate According to AI Al Gore. I think you'll find it really, really interesting. The research is terrific. We will be right back with Joel Gilbert. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Here we go, guys. No whining this time. And one, two. out of the clouds.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history. It is with great honor and pride that we have been able to support several amazing local businesses like these over the years.
Thanks to the Redding Rancheria for their support of the Kiwanis Fiesta Dam Club Food for Kids program. We send 185 bags of food home every Friday. They're instrumental in helping us.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Hey friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Padron, 60th anniversary. My new personal favorite, starting with an exclusive Perfecto shape. Handcrafted by one master roller, using only the finest tobaccos from Nicaragua. After 60 years of excellence, this cigar is Padron's masterpiece. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Thank you, Redding Rancheria, for supporting Tree of Life International Charter School. Gracias por todo su apoyo.
Thank you, Redding Rancheria!
The Shasta Lake Chamber of Commerce wants to thank the Redding Rancheria. They have sponsored our Friday night in the park for more than 18 years, and we really appreciate it.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Now don't talk to me about the polar bear. Don't talk to me about the ozone layer. Ain't so much of anything these days, even the air. They're rolling out of rhinos, why do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphins. Let's hear it for the trees. Ain't running out of nothing in my deep freeze. It's casual entertainment. We ain't.
A little climate change Dire Straits there for you. Yeah, Joel, if you ever want to put music to any of it, I'll send you my playlist. I'll tell you what, the climate shows are my favorite. There is so much good material out there to mock these guys, actually. So we've spoken with, like, Judith Curry and some other climate science people who basically were drummed out of their positions because they refused to toe the line.
Yeah, well, it's very difficult for anyone that doesn't agree because there's just trillions at stake, trillions that are being paid to people to agree. And if you don't agree, you've got to go to these, create your own website, your own organization. It's just very difficult. For example, my trailer for this movie on YouTube, under the trailer, written by Google, it says right there, the UN has determined that climate change is caused by human activity. It goes on and on with all these links. So yeah, I can't even have a trailer about my movie without them.
Oh, yeah, it's in a blue box. I skipped right by it when I hit the share button, but you're right. Yeah. It's a giant
box. No matter what you do, it's in the computer system. Automatically, you get attacked by the computer just if you say anything that contradicts their narrative.
Yeah. And so it says, why am I seeing this? Oh, here we go. So I can give them some feedback. I think I'll give them feedback. Pretty sure they'll throw it away, but I'll do my part. And tell them I don't like their warning label. So testifying before Congress, or who are you working with? Like, how's that shaping up?
Well, there's an organization that is helping Congress prepare some people to talk it, to put together some committee hearings about the whole climate hoax. And so I'm working with them, and I'm hoping to get a spot to talk about where it all started. I think I've done the most important research no one has ever done, is where did we get this idea that there's too much carbon dioxide and humans are destroying the Earth because of it? Where did it come from? Let's take a look. Well, Al Gore invented it in 1992. He lied about where it came from, claimed he got it out of Harvard, and that wasn't true. And people need to know this to understand why it's bunk, because it was made up by a politician who was not very smart, who was trying to get votes. And that was his whole thing, was he was just wanted a political issue that would propel him to the White House. It ultimately failed, but we got stuck with his whole climate hoax nonsense.
And we can't get out from under it. Even though it's been really solidly, I mean, piece by piece, but I do understand it is a money thing.
Yeah, there's just so much money involved today. Think about it. All the car companies have gone electric. You know, they all make electric. Mercedes and BMW all make electric cars. Ford, foolishly, are building a pickup truck factory for F-150s in Tennessee to make all-electric pickup trucks. Now, I just laugh because I know that the type of people that drive pickup trucks do not believe in the whole electric car nonsense. So all these companies are losing billions on this idea of creating electric passenger cars, but they know that the government will bail them out. I think that's why they're doing it. They know they'll get billions in subsidies, they'll get bailed out for doing it. So that's why they're all kind of going along. It's one big financial scam.
It's crazy. Well, Congressman Doug LaMalfa, that covers the 1st District here in Northern California, he was the one who had that panel of industry folks. They weren't bureaucrats. They were industry people. And asked him how much CO2 was in the atmosphere. And No one knows.
You can ask Greta Thunberg, you know, all the climate radicals.
Please.
Ask them how much carbon dioxide is in the atmosphere right now and how much is too much, and they have no clue. No one even knows. It's 1/3 of 1%. So you could double or triple it. It could be 1%, and it would have no effect on the weather.
Yeah. They came up with some pretty high numbers, and bottom line, they thought they could wait him out and not answer, and, of course, that didn't really work out. You made him give him a number, and they all really basically looked super stupid.
Yeah.
Because they thought it was, you know, people come up with these 30%. They're like, yeah, no. I think that's great. Well, we'll be sure and promote you as a resource, because I think if people contacted, are you working primarily with House or Senate? Do you know?
I'm not sure where the committee is going to be.
Okay, well,
could be both.
We're all represented by both. You have a lot of easier access to your member of the House most of the time, as a constituent. So I would encourage people to get a hold of their representatives, go on the website, get Joel's information, send it to him, and say, hey, if you are involved in anything with the climate, you should call him. I just think that would be really, really helpful, because we never get into that. We wind up just getting, you know, wrapped around the axle with, is it good, is it bad? Are humans destroying the planet? I think polar bears are kind of out now, though, aren't they? Have we stopped talking about polar bears?
Well, a lot of the stuff has come and gone. One of the funniest ones I mentioned earlier, the hole in the ozone layer.
Yeah.
Gore introduced this in the 90s. There's a hole in the ozone layer. It's too thin. We're all going to get too much sunburn. We haven't heard a word about that in 20 years. It was just something they made up that they realized had no scientific basis, and they dropped it. Polar bears, melting ice caps, they're all just little things they bring up, and no one really knows or can research it, and they just kind of repeat it, even though it's not true.
Yeah. We have a local guy that kind of has gone berserk about the bleaching of the coral. And it was funny because we interviewed the guy who started Greenpeace and then left because he realized the people in Greenpeace were stupid. And I cannot think of his name. Dr. What's-His-Face. Anyway, he was terrific. It was quite some time ago, and he said, yeah, that like really made him mad, actually. I asked about that, and he kind of flared, and he's like, coral is white. It's the plankton that lives in the coral that gives it color. It's always white. You can't bleach it. It was like, oh, sorry. Like, we didn't know. So, you know, they tell us stuff that we don't have, you know, we're not, most of us are not scientists. And so then you kind of just sit back and you don't say anything. But this information is stuff you can actually use, the things that you're debunking, which is very helpful. So we have like a few minutes. Tell us some of your other stuff. Sorry to cram it all in the last 5 seconds.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty well known for the movie I mentioned, Dreams from My Real Father, about Obama's background. I think I made the case with a ton of evidence. We don't have the DNA, but Obama, of course, came on the scene, and his whole claim to fame was, my father's from Kenya, my mother's from Kansas. Because of my unique background, I'm going to bring us all together. That was his story.
Yeah.
And that was the media pushed that narrative, and it's just total nonsense. Obama admits he was raised in Hawaii by Frank Marshall Davis. I've talked to Obama's best friends, and they said he spent a lot of time with him, and he was radicalized by this Soviet agent named Frank Marshall Davis, who was one of the original black Bolsheviks out of Chicago in the Communist Party USA that went to Hawaii. And that's a very important film. It's been seen by millions of people. I've made films on, you know, Donald Trump called Trump the Art of the Insult. It's a very funny movie. You can see that, get that on Amazon and live stream it everywhere about the whole 2016 campaign. And you really see that Trump is really a marketing genius. He keeps it real simple, and he puts out these marketing ideas, and that's why he's been so successful. Of course, the Trayvon Martin case kind of started the Black Lives Matter, kind of was formed because of Zimmerman's acquittal. And I think I definitively showed with all the proof that the key witness that the prosecution used, Rachel Gentile, was a fake witness. The prosecution knew it. Ben Crump knew it. He committed witness tampering. The Martin family was in on it. They wanted to shake down the homeowners associations for insurance money, and then Obama used that case to get reelected, because you might not remember that in 2012, he'd really had a failed presidency. The economy was doing terrible. No one was better off, and they weren't really sure he was going to get reelected or if black people would come out again and vote for him. And that's why they went with this narrative of the Trayvon Martin case of injustice to inflame black voters to get them to come out. And that's what Obama did in his second term, especially. He divided the country along racial lines. When Obama was elected, the polls showed that race relations were considered positive by 70% of both blacks and whites. When Obama leaves office, it's the opposite. Only 30% of blacks and whites think race relations are good. So he ruined race relations in this country for power and did nothing for the black community at all. So I think my films have revealed a number of major issues, and I think the latest one about the climate hoax is the best one yet. ClimateAlGore.com.
I think, and the website's terrific. Your ClimateAlGore.com, the whole site, there's quite a bit on there, and there's a director Q&A and, you know, screenings, how to buy it, the trailer, all of it's on there. Which is very, very helpful. And it's kind of funny, you watching your own movie, so you can kind of, it's fun, most of the people that we speak with on the radio, we don't know what they look like, but it's kind of fun, we got you right there.
Right.
So we really appreciate that. That's a really important work, and I can't imagine it's taken this long to get this out. This guy has had free run of our minds and our pocketbooks for such a long time, and we can only hope that you were instrumental in kneecapping him. And probably I hope you don't get the Presidential Medal of anything, because it's
kind of worthless now.
It kind of only goes to bad guys anymore.
Yeah.
Our guest has been Joel Gilbert. Thanks a lot, Joel, for being with us. You can find this interview commercial-free at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Okay, thank you.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.